So great. I am so stoked, so excited to be here today to speak on this subject of freedom. What a great country that we can live in, where five generations can come into the same room and we can lift up the name of Jesus and we can do it all together and get along. What a wonderful gift that is. What a wonderful place that is. And so, it's great to be with you this morning. It's summertime. It's a lot of fun. You're doing fun activities during the summertime. Last week, Pastor Eddie came up here and blew it out of the park. Did he not blow it out of the park? Incredible word. And so then they asked me, those cruel, cruel people, to follow him. But I'm so glad to be with you today. I think about America. I think about what freedom means. We call this Independence Day, or the Day of Independence. Back in 1776, our forefathers decided that they had had enough of British rule and that they were going to form a country of their own. And so they banded together, formed a Congress, and signed a paper called the Declaration of Independence. Now, in doing so, what they realized, they knew when they put their pen on the paper, they knew what it meant. What it meant was that they would, in some cases, almost be signing their own death wish. They knew that war was coming. They had balanced the cost. Thank you, Eddie. They had balanced the cost, and they knew that this was not going to be a popular thing. Very courageous men. And I think about that, and I think about the history, our 240-year history that we have in America. And I think about the English pilgrims, for example, even before we became a nation, they came to this country. And I think about the French Huguenots and the Spanish and all of the European settlers. And I think about all of that and all the influences, even from Africa, and all of that that make up this great country. And I think about our history. I think about things like this. I think about the various histories that we have, the various stages of history that we have. I think about all that. And it's a lot to think about. And I think about this. I also think about the emblems that we have, the symbols that we have. For example, if you take something like this, if you look at our own flag, our own unique flag, it started out with 13 stars that represented the 13 colonies, by the way, South Carolina being one of them. And then it went from 13, then it, by the time it got to the Civil War, we had 38 stars, and in 1944, we had 48 stars, and now 50 today, a growing nation. That's unique. There's no other flag like that. Then I think about things like this. I think about the bald eagle. How many of you love this bird? Incredible, incredible, incredible symbol that we have in this country, and how it was a great choice for some. They wanted to choose the turkey. I mean, how crazy would that be? Thank God they chose the bald eagle. Strong, soars high, is a fierce hunter, and can see with vision like no other animal on earth. That's the bald eagle. I think about that. It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to take in, all of that history, all of those symbols. I think about things like this, Washington, D.C., that a city that is full of monuments. And I think about places like this. I think about Arlington Cemetery, where you can walk, and row after row after row after row, you will see the places where the men are buried who sacrificed, who gave the greatest sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice, to preserve and protect our freedom. And places like Iwo Jima, that amazing monument, which I think is probably best at night when you visit that. And these are all iconic images that help create an image that we have of freedom. They convey an importance that we have. They translate from generation to generation an importance that says that freedom really is never free, but that it costs something. I'm thankful for all of that. But then I begin to think about that, and I think about the settlers, and I think about all the history, and I think about this. I think about what was the driving factor? What was the common motivation that all of those men had, all of those women had, in finding this place and founding a country, traveling across the oceans, all of the things that we've done, the sacrifice, the invention, all of that? What was the driving thing? And what I found was a common thread. It actually goes to the very fabric and the fiber of our being. It's something that we all share in this room. And as a matter of fact, every single person born on the planet shares this fact. And that is, we want to be accepted. The pilgrims, the Huguenots, the Spanish, all of those guys came to this country because they wanted to share life and to do life with a group of people who thought like they did, who had the same values that they did, who recognized personal freedom and really put a value on life itself. But they wanted to be accepted. They weren't accepted in their own country, so they moved out and found a new place. And so our whole country really was founded on that principle. It's something that's very personal. It's something that's it's just embedded inside of us. It goes right to our DNA. As a matter of fact, I believe it's the way God made us. He made us to be relational. He made us to be free. You go all the way back and you look in the Garden of Eden when he made man and he made the earth and he gave the earth to Adam and he said, "This is your dominion." And at that point, we became partners with God. And so he said, "Here it is. You have dominion. You have freedom." That's the way he designed us. So then we think about all that. We think about that. We think about us as being Americans. Then how can we truly live really free in this life, in this society that we live in today? I'm glad you asked. The Apostle Paul has something very specific, and he gives us a clue in the letters, the epic letters that he wrote to the Romans, who happened to be a little fussy, by the way. And so in those letters, he was trying to calm them down and give them some instruction. And he said this when he was regarding freedom in the 15th chapter of Romans, verse 7. It says, look at this, "Accept one another just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God." I love the first word there, accept, because it goes right to the bone. It goes right to the core of who we are as individuals. Everybody that I know loves to be accepted. Everybody that I know loves to be included in something. They love to be a part of something. As a matter of fact, I've never met anyone that says, "I don't want to be accepted." That's never happened in my lifetime. And so as a musician, you know, a lot of times we think about this. We think about when we think of praising God, lifting God up, the last part of that verse. If we could put that verse up just for one quick moment, I want to refer back to it. We think about, in our modern worship service, we think about music, you know, being the way. And as a musician, you know, I love to sing and I love to play instruments and I love to lift the name of the Lord. I love to bring praise to the Lord. But sometimes our best, highest worship is when we choose to accept the person sitting in the seat right next to us. That's what the Apostle Paul is saying to the Romans. He said, if you really want to worship, if you really want to lift God up, if you really want to get his attention, accept the person right next to you. Even though they may be completely different than you, accept them. I can't tell you the power that acceptance can have. When you walk into this room, and many of you know this experience because you experienced it just like me when I first came, when my family first came over 8 years ago, we walked into this place, and someone turned to me, and their eyes locked on my eyes, and they extended their hand, and with their warm, gentle voice, they said, "Welcome. We're glad you're here." And just in that simple phrase, it didn't matter what I was bringing in the door. All of a sudden, it's like all of my suitcases just dropped on the floor because someone welcomed me, because someone in the power of that sentence said, "You are accepted." That's what we're looking for. As people, we all strive to be loved. We all strive to be accepted. There are two individuals in our congregation. And if you don't know these two individuals, I challenge you to get to know them because your life will be blessed when you meet them. But two ladies in particular, Deborah Malone and Clarissa Harps. Now, y'all know, if you all know those girls, you all know the power they have of acceptance. Deborah can look at you and she can light up that smile, and in doing so, all of a sudden, whatever you were thinking about just went out the door. And if she ever gets a hold of you and hugs you, you will never, ever forget it. Clarissa's the same way. If that girl ever gets a hold of you and gives you a hug, you will walk away thinking, "Wow, what just happened to me?" Because they understand the power of acceptance. When you walk in that door, and I'm not a hugger. How many of y'all, you're like me, and I'm just not. I like interaction. I like all that. But I don't just walk up to somebody and say, hey, let's hug. That's not me. But I will tell you this. They have such a love, and they have such an understanding of the scripture that when they hug you, it is like wherever you were, you just left that place, and you went to wherever they are. Because you feel the love. You feel the acceptance. There is a power. There is an absolute power in that. I promise you, I don't think there is a demon in hell that can stop the hug of Deborah Malone. I mean, and as a matter of fact, when she hugs people, I think they get probably pretty mad because it has that kind of power, that accepting power. Paul continues further in the book of Galatians. He's continuing this theme as he now begins to talk and send and write letters to another group of people. In the fifth chapter of Galatians, he says this. He says, you, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Now, that word called right there, there's a Greek word for that simply means destined or designed. So if you can put that in there, you were destined or designed to be free. My brothers and sisters, you were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Now, the word flesh there is really talking about the sinful nature, but rather serve one another humbly in love. Now, freedom is not a place where we just go and there's not a bunch of rules, right? That's not what we're talking about here. We have rules in this country. We have laws. Thank God there is a stripe that goes down the middle of the street and gives us the indication to be on the right side of the left. Thank God there's a stop sign. So laws are put in place, but what he's really focusing here is what he's really saying is serve one another. If you really want to know the power of freedom, if you really want to know the power that acceptance can bring, then look at serving someone else. Look at helping someone else. Now, many of you know this, that my father was a minister, and I grew up in a parsonage. I grew up in a minister's home. And I guess it's true what they say about PKs to a certain extent. But for the most part, I think they get a bad rap. And so, but anyway, being in a pastor's home and being raised in a pastor's home, I always felt like I was accepted. I always felt like I had a loving family. But we moved around a lot. And we would go from town to town and from church to church. And we would go from school to school. And I think looking back on it, it really formed part of my personality in the sense that I love to meet people. But I don't love to say goodbye to people. It was just hard. It was hard. You'd start loving people. You felt like you were, you know, kind of starting to fit in a little bit, maybe. And then all of a sudden, you would be unrooted, and you would go to the next school. And so by the third grade, I had already changed schools two times. And it was tough. I mean, if you remember that time in your life, you remember that time when you were young, that's very formative years when you're starting relationships and trying to figure out how connection works and all that kind of thing. And so we moved from one part of town into the other, and in doing so, I had to change schools. This was my new school. It was called Dennis C. Wooten, and I walked into that school, and I walked into the third grade, and my third grade teacher, her name was Miss Collins, and so third grade is the first place where you begin to read aloud. Now, I know our kids are smarter today, and they're probably doing that in kindergarten. But back when I was being brought up in school, third grade was the first place you finally got past the see Dick run, you know, see Jane, all that stuff. And so now we were kind of into the Huck Finn and the Tom Sawyers, and we were reading aloud, starting to read novels. And so in the third grade, she would get it. We would all get it from our desk, and we would go back to the back of the room, and we would sit down on the reading rug. Y'all remember, did y'all ever have that, the reading rug? And so we would go back, and we would sit in a circle, and she would pass the book around, and we would all read a couple of sentences or a paragraph, and we would get there. And all of a sudden, I would start reading, and it's just like all of a sudden things started moving on the page, and I would spit and sputter, and I could never really get it out. And then the kids would start snickering, and I was just so embarrassed, and I thought, oh, man, what is wrong with me? And that happened two or three times within the course of the first week. And so finally, Miss Collins, probably really not knowing what to do with me, she came to me and said, Jan, we're going to have to send you to special reading. And I thought, oh, what is that? What is special reading? And she's like, well, it's this classroom that helps you read better and helps you bring you up to par. And so I said, what does that mean? And she says, well, you're going to leave your class every day, and you're going to go down to special reading. So they put me in that program, and so every day in the third grade, when it came time for reading, They would take me out of the class. They would walk me down this long hallway all the way down to the steps in the basement of the school where it was dark and there were no windows. And I would sit down there with other kids that I did not know and start doing speech therapy and other things like that. They just didn't know what was wrong with me. And I hated it. I'll just tell you, it was an awful experience. Every day when I would get to class, I would think, I just dreaded the fact that I would have to go to special reading and walk all the way down the hall and go all the way in there. It was just awful. And, you know, kids are cruel. They can be cruel. And so here came the names, and here came the labels, and here came all the ridicule and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm in the class, and guess what? I stay in for third grade, fourth grade, and fifth grade. And in fifth grade, something changed. And that something that changed, her name was Miss Baker. And the special reading teacher that I had for those 2 years and part of the third year was, she started teaching like in 1946, so she was done. You know, I mean, she was just tapped out. She was like, okay, just go over here and read this book or whatever, you know, whatever. And so then Miss Baker showed up, and this is Miss Baker. And she was young, and she was smart, and she was fresh out of college, and she had fresh perspective, and she smelled wonderful. Ooh, I mean, she had the best perfume. So I remember I'd be at my desk, you know, and I would doing whatever exercises they told me to do. And so I would be there, and I would say, Miss Baker, I need some help, and she would come over. She would come over, and she would lean real close, and I would get a whiff of that pump. Oh, yes! And I was smitten. I was absolutely in love, and I would pretty much do what she said to do and master the task, but 5 minutes later, I'd say, I'm not sure I understand that. Can you come back? I was just in love. I was just, you know, I'm sorry, baby, you weren't my first love. It was Miss Baker, but... But I was just in love with, I was just in rapture with her. She had energy. She had passion for what she was doing. And so we began to work, and she'd say, read this. And I would read it, and the same thing would happen. I'd be completely embarrassed in front of her. And she'd say, read it again. She'd say, well, Jan, do you know this word? Yes, that's this word. And I would say whatever word that was. And she'd say, okay, well, do you know this word? Yes, I know that word. She said, what happens when you put the words together? And I said, it's like the words move on the page. They just turn different directions and different colors sometimes, and just weird stuff. And she said, Jan, I think you have something that we've been studying about in college before I took this job. It's called dyslexia. And I remember the feeling when she said that. I looked at her, and this big crocodile tear came out of my eye, and my lip began to quiver a little bit, my voice, and I said, Miss Baker, how long do I have to live? And she said, no, it's not like that. I'm like, that's what's wrong with me. I'm going to die. She said, I think it's the way you see things. I think it's the way you perceive the words on the page. And it's sometimes she said, does it look like your letters are backwards? And I said, yeah, it does. And so for the rest of that year, she began to work with me and give me skills and exercises. And all of a sudden, I didn't dread the walkway from my class all the way down the hall, down the steps anymore. I couldn't wait till I got a special reading because she lit that whole experience up for me. And I would walk in and I'd say, let's get to work. Let's do this. And she'd say, okay, here are the exercises on focus that we're going to do today that's going to help you focus on the words. So I began to do that. And at the end of the year, you have what they call, you test out of it to see if you have the skills to go back into your class. And when I tested out 3 grades above where I was supposed to be with the rest of the kids in my class. And I went from being the kid that was ridiculed. I went from the kid that people made fun of, that they said, oh, there goes stupid Janton going down the hall, to now having this whole world opened up to me by the efforts of that teacher. And now I can read. Now I can not stutter. Now I can do things. It's free. Freedom. I can learn. I can read any book I want to. I mean, what an amazing gift she made. The Apostle Paul knew this when he said, serve one another. Now, you don't have to serve people just in the four walls of this church. You can serve people at your job. You know, ask the Lord, ask the Holy Spirit, Father, how can I today serve the person that's sitting in the cubicle next to me? My wife has been a nurse for years. And she has one of the most incredible ministries because she takes care of people every day. And this is what the Apostle Paul was saying. If you want to know freedom, if you really want to know freedom, you really want to know how this works, then begin to serve somebody else. That's why we put a premium on guest services. That's why we put a premium around here when you walk in the door and you feel welcome. We believe you belong. You see it on our walls. It's one of our core values here at Cathedral. We believe you belong. And I believe that is a fundamental belief that leads you into freedom. I really believe the two are connected. I really believe that. We were in a meeting a couple of weeks ago with several pastors from the church, and I kind of walked into that meeting, and they said, Jan, we're talking about some various facets of the church and how we can improve it. Let me ask you a question. What do you think people want when they walk in? And without hesitation, I said this. I said, people want to be accepted. They want to feel like when they walk in the door that they're important. And that's it. That's what the Apostle Paul is telling the Galatians. That's what he's trying to get over to them. But it's interesting because I think it's important to note right here that even though we talk about acceptance, there is an opposite of that. I don't want to dwell too much on that this morning, but there is an opposite of that. And the opposite of that is what? Rejection. Many of us in our life, just like I did in the third grade, you have your own stories, perhaps even more illustrative of rejection. And so that's also part of the human experience. That's also part of something that we all live through and work through. And I want you to see a story of a young lady that's in our church who had that very experience. She moved around from place to place, not really ever feeling accepted. She comes here, walks through our doors, and something amazing happens. I want you to watch her story. Yeah. Isn't that great? You see, when you experience the love of God, when you experience acceptance, it will cause you to write a song. And that song will say, my name is written on high. Bible says there is a book that our names are in. And that's the ultimate goal. That's the ultimate goal, is to go home, is to go be with Jesus in heaven. But until we get there, when you receive acceptance like that, you want to tell everybody. Somebody walking across the street, the homeless man downtown that you may see begging for money, you want to say, let me tell you what happened to me. Because if it happened to me, it'll happen to you. The prostitute, doesn't matter who it is. You may say, Jan, you don't know me. You don't know where I've come from. You don't know what I've done. Guess what? It does not matter. The grace and the power of God, the Bible says that the blood covers a multitude of sins. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you've come from. What matters is that you're here. What matters is that you're plugged in. What matters is that you begin to know that you, in fact, are a child of God. Look at this. I've got a couple of more scriptures I want to show you real quickly. First of all, 1 Peter, 2nd chapter, verse 9 says, and I love this scripture, but you are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do His work, and to speak out for Him, to tell others of the night and day difference He made in you. From nothing, I love this, to something. And my favorite part, from rejected to accepted. That is the miracle of freedom. That's the miracle that only that He can provide. His love, His grace, is so powerful that it can cover any rejection that you've ever experienced in your life. I know that. Bible says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever would believe in him would be saved. He knows the power of that blood and the power that it gives. There is a poem that you see that is inscribed in the base of the Statue of Liberty. I want to quote that poem. It says this. It says, give me, this is not the entire part, but this is the part that I love. It says, give me your tired. Give me your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Now that poem was inspired by an earlier, older poem that I want to read to you. It's out of the chapter of Matthew, Matthew the 11th chapter, 28th and the 30th verse. It says this. It says, are you tired? Worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how I can take rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch me. I'll show you how to do it. I love this. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy on or ill fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. I look sometimes at that big C logo that we have outside and that is on the paper of my stationery. And sometimes I wonder if the C really doesn't mean cathedral, but that it really means come. When Jesus called Peter out of the boat, when he said, come out of the place to where you are into a new place where you can be, and he walked on the water, I believe that he really didn't walk on the water, but more appropriately, he walked on the word, C-O-M-E, come. There's an invitation for you to experience freedom today. There's an invitation for you to know all the graces and all the knowledge and all the love that God has for you. I want the worship team to come. They're going to come right now. And I want us to have a time where we reflect through that. We worship through that. And we begin to realize that, in fact, we do belong.